This is the No Long Twos podcast. I'm your host, Mike Zavagno. Be sure to check us out, a member of the Almighty Ballin' Network, as well as all of the other Almighty Ballin' podcasts at almightyballin.com. And follow me on Twitter at mzavagno11. All aboard! Another edition of the No Long Twos podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mike Zavagno, and I'm here with Jake Hurley in the lab. What's going on?
Not too much. Just got home from a long day at work. Been gone from the house for about 16 hours now, so kind of feeling the effects of a long day at work. Definitely happy to be here, talk a little basketball. Definitely a nice reprieve for me as far as my days go, so definitely happy to be here.
Yeah, we'll just pretend that last night's Cavs-Warriors game didn't happen.
not sure it started.
Not going to get into that one very much. I think everybody knows how that one went. But we did want to start with a little bit of news. Not something that we typically do on this program, but it was announced earlier tonight by Dan Wojcicki that Chris Paul actually tore a ligament in his thumb and will be out for 6 to 8 weeks. He's having surgery tomorrow. Saw the play last night that happened on live. Chris Paul was guarding Russell Westbrook. Westbrook kind of came off a screen. Paul looked to go over the screen. It looked like his thumb kind of got caught in the shorts of Westbrook as Westbrook went up for a jumper, and you could tell that Paul was extremely angry after the play, and this is obviously why. So another tough break for the Clippers, a team that really can't seem to catch a break when it comes to their stars staying healthy.
Yeah, last night I think I actually saw your tweet when I woke up in the middle of the night sometime, just as far as what happened with the Chris Paul injury with his thumb or hand getting stuck in Russ's shorts, and just kind of with the nature of that, I kind of assumed the worst right away, whether it be a broken thumb or something with his hand or wrist, as far as it being a little more severe as the initial x-rays, which were negative, may have led on. But it's definitely going to be a little bit of a struggle here for the next 6 to 8 weeks or so for the Clippers. With Chris Paul being out, the true point god in the league really at this point. The Clippers haven't really played a ton without him over the past couple years, but just as far as when they have played without him over the past couple of seasons, they have struggled a bit, especially so this season. They're basically 2-5 without Chris Paul. They were 3-5 without him last year, so definitely struggled just a little bit as far as him not being in the lineup the past several years.
Yeah, the Clippers are currently 29-14, which puts them at fourth in the West, but they're three games behind Houston, and this is a Houston team that's really playing well, and I'd expect that Houston essentially has the three seed locked up, barring any injuries. Right now, 538, before the Chris Paul injury, actually projects the Clippers to finish fifth at 51-31, just one game behind the Jazz, but four games ahead of Memphis and OKC, so it's going to be interesting to see exactly what happens here. Maybe not the worst thing to get out of that 4-5 matchup with the Warriors looming obviously in the second round, but at the same point in time, if you're the Clippers, you're the 6 or the 7 seed, you're still going to have to either go into Houston, go into San Antonio, and win a series, which the Clippers have struggled with in the past. But like you said, the Clippers really have struggled this year without Chris Paul. Granted, Blake Griffin also out in those games. Saw Blake Griffin taking some shots before last night's game. Not sure what that means as far as his timeline. I know that in 2013-14, when Paul had the separated shoulder, the Clippers were actually 12-6 without Chris Paul, and Blake Griffin basically played at an MVP level, 27.5, 8.2, I'm 55% from the field, but can't really say that Blake Griffin's that guy anymore, especially given the litany of injuries that he's had the last 2 years.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that we can expect that level of play out of Blake Griffin once he returns, and once he, even if he's at full strength, really don't think he's that guy who's going to be able to carry that team like he did back in 2013, 2014. And then as far as the alternatives, as far as the Clippers are concerned with their backup point guard situation, they did acquire Raymond Felton in the offseason, and then obviously they have Austin Rivers as well. Austin Rivers has
shown... Coach's son out there.
Yeah, real coach's son, real general on the floor out there, a real extension of Glenn Rivers. But yeah, the Clippers definitely have... So they have two solid NBA role players. Now, those guys obviously can't fill Chris Paul's shoes by any means. They've struggled, certainly, without him on the floor, their net rating. So Felton, without Paul on the floor, he's minus 5.2. And then Rivers, same thing, minus 4.6 without Chris Paul on the floor. And then the Clippers, without those two guys on the floor, they tend to be much better, typically just because Chris Paul is the guy who's on the floor in those particular situations. So definitely don't really like the way that that's trending for the Clippers. You hope that they can kind of be buoyed by those two guys in the meantime, maybe hover around 500, maybe a little bit over if Blake Griffin returns to full strength and can be a shadow of that guy we saw a couple years ago at those MVP levels. But really, as far as their situation there in LA right now, not ideal for the Clips.
Yeah, like we talked about last week, Chris Paul, the Clippers are 21 points per 100 possessions better with him on the floor. That's not a number you really see from anyone, not even James Harden, Giannis, LeBron. No one's really has that great of a differential. We talked about Austin Rivers. He's also mainly been playing off the ball. Granted, Raymond Felton's kind of slid into that backup point guard slot, and we've seen Rivers kind of as a mix two or three this season. So not entirely sure where the Clippers will turn. This has been billed to be really the last year or the year that they need to make a move, because Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, both free agents this offseason. Doc Rivers, you don't really know how long he's going to continue putting up with this. You know, he lives in Orlando. Sometimes it's the winter. You're in Minnesota, second night of a back-to-back. Doc might be thinking about getting on the golf course in Orlando. We know he does both the Rock Divers GM role as well as the Doc Rivers coaching role. So you never really know. This is an interesting situation and not a great one for a Clippers team that is kind of in flux. And we'll see whether or not Memphis or OKC can then overtake them, move into that fifth spot, and what happens when we see Chris Paul back. But that's likely not going to be until maybe April. After that breaking news, we really wanted to come with you today with the Trust the Process podcast, talk about the Sixers. They're currently 13-26, which actually gives them the sixth worst record in the NBA, but they're currently projected by 538 to be 27-55 on the year. That would be the third worst record per 538, but this is a team that's on fire. Relatively speaking, they're 6-2 in their last eight games with a 1.4 net rating, and the process himself, Joel Embiid, has really changed basically everything for this franchise.
Yeah, so in what's now essentially year four of the Sam Hinkie process, the Sixers are really kind of starting to see the fruits of Hinkie's labor and Hinkie's process. Obviously at 13-26 right now, not the greatest record, but again, this was kind of supposed to be the penultimate year of the process as far as it was concerned. Embiid obviously missing 2 years, that wasn't ideal. I've certainly been remiss based on what we've missed of him the past 2 years with how great he's been so far. He's almost, if I dare say, more entertaining on the court than he is off the court. I mean, the guy's just an electric social media type guy, but he's incredible to watch play the game with the energy and passion that he plays with. I love watching these Sixers games, and that's not something that I would even dare to say over the past couple seasons, but just as far as seeing how much they've grown and really a semblance of almost a real team coming together, it's pretty exciting to see. Definitely happy to be here in Philadelphia. I know we've talked about it the past couple weeks, and hopefully in the next couple weeks catching a couple games, just because we can, and it's so inexpensive, and we have that option, and obviously we're both big basketball guys, so we definitely hope to do that in the near future, but really some exciting things going on in Philadelphia right now.
I've seen two things over the past 2 days in regards to Embiid. The first being that he's the most fun rookie we may have ever had. Maybe Shaq, but when you think about his social media impact, Shaq didn't have that, obviously. Things like Twitter didn't exist. And Embiid's really having fun with this more than anybody else. When Hassan Whiteside said that people kind of make jokes out of the All-Star campaign, he quote tweets it and says, Hassan Whiteside, NBA vote.
Just helping him out.
How do you really contend with something like that? And then something more substantive in terms of his on-the-court play, I also saw, I think it was Nate Duncan, suggest that he's having the biggest impact of any rookie on their team since Tim Duncan. And that was somewhat of a controversial statement, but when you look at the numbers, I think that Embiid is really doing it differently than you typically see with rookies. Usually when there's a star rookie coming into the league, he's going to be an offensive presence, but rookies are really behind the curve on defense. What we've seen from Joel Embiid is that he makes this defense elite level. When he's on the floor, the Sixers have a 99.3 defensive rating, which would rank in the top five. And his rim protection, he's the best rim protector in the league. He's allowing 42.5% at the rim. In November, that was 50%. December, 48.3%. January, a ridiculous 29.3%. And the Sixers' defensive rating has declined along with Joel Embiid. So they started at 22nd in November, and they're all the way down to 2nd in the month of January. This is a guy whose impact, although he's a good offensive player, is really being felt on the defensive end of the floor. And I think that's what's impressed me most.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Just as far as his defensive development goes, and we kind of hope to see that type of leap from a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns, or maybe even Kristaps Porzingis, two guys who are obviously the top two in Rookie of the Year voting last year. But Towns has almost regressed defensively, even under Tom Thibodeau's tutelage. Little alliteration there for you. But Embiid has really shown huge strides on the defensive end. I know early in the season we kind of criticized him a little bit just from the game that we watched in Cleveland. He got lost a little bit on the defensive end, especially off the ball. But when he's able to basically be planted near the paint, he affects every single shot at the rim. He had 5 blocks the other night against Milwaukee, basically affecting every single one of their shots at the rim by either Jabari or Giannis. And really just what Embiid's been able to do so far has been absolutely incredible. And despite all the jokes and anecdotes about getting Joel Embiid to the All-Star game, and granted he probably doesn't deserve to start it, but if he did make the All-Star game, whether it was as a starter or a reserve, it might not be all that crazy or all that terrible at this point, just based on what he's been able to do and how much he's really grown the past couple months.
Yeah, over the last 8 games, like we said, they're 6-2. Embiid, 27 minutes per game, so he's getting that minute limit up a little bit. He's averaging 22.6 points, 8.7 rebounds, 2.6 blocks, and getting to the line 11 times per night. But what's most impressive is that when he's on the floor, the Sixers have a 92 defensive rating and a net rating of 17.8. When he's off the floor, defensive rating drops all the way to 111, which would be the worst in the NBA, and they have a net rating of negative 14.8. This is a guy who essentially makes them two different teams. We've seen the team where Joel Embiid is the anchor in the middle, and then we see a team where Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel, some combination of the two of them is kind of on the perimeter, guarding guys, not having the same impact as Embiid does in the middle. And another two guys, or really 3 guys, I think, who have come along over the course of this 8-game streak are Nick Stauskas and Robert Covington and TJ McConnell.
Yeah, and those 3 guys, they kind of struggled early on in their career. Covington was kind of fairly or unfairly billed as a 3-and-D guy just based off what he was able to do in his rookie campaign. He was one of those second-round guys for Sam Hinkie. They took a flyer on him. He was able to be somewhat successful in that role. He's a guy who, as we've talked about and as we notice, been pretty bad at home, but plays a lot better
Sixers
on the road.
Sixers fans come for his head, man.
Yeah, Sixers fans absolutely hate Robert Robert Covington, but he's been obviously really good over these past eight games. He's averaging 12.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, 2 steals a game. The Sixers rating with him on the floor is 4.2. With him off, it's been -3.8. And then Stauskas also in these past eight games or so, the Sixers net rating with him on the floor has been +8.5. And without him on the floor, they've been -7.5. And then McConnell as well, he's a guy who obviously before this wrist injury that he had, they were playing pretty well with him as the starter there. He picked up a triple-double in that stretch, but he's basically averaging 7.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, and then 8.5 assists per game. And then really it's been incredible, and I know that you've tweeted about this a couple times, and we may have mentioned it just on here, but as far as his numbers when he's looking for his own shot versus his numbers when he's looking to create shots for others.
Yeah, he ranks in the 6th percentile creating his own shot, and the 97th percentile, essentially 5th or 6th best in the league. He's kind of been fluctuating between the two of them when you count all of his possessions plus his assists. So this is a guy who's really out there to create for other people. A guy who actually works within the framework of this Sixers team because he is a true point guard, and he's not a guy that's necessarily going to get his own, but he's a guy who's going to set up guys like Embiid. He set up Covington fairly well over this stretch, and this kind of leads me into a question that I wanted to ask you. When we're looking at this team moving forward, who do you think on this team, besides Embiid, obviously, is someone that could be a Sixers player on a maybe 500 team as they start to get better versus, you know, guys who are more filler type guys who are here for this stage, but you don't really see them as players that can actually impact a decent team?
Yeah, and I think that that's a fair question, and it's kind of something that I wonder about as well, just watching this Sixer team, like, which of these guys might be around in the long run or even next year. I think that one guy, and I know that there's a lot of noise surrounding him right now, but I do think that one of those guys who might be able to be successful, might have a role on an average team or a 500 team, is Nerlens Noel. I know that he has struggled a little bit since coming back from his injury. He's never been an offensive threat, really. Not a great shooter. Doesn't really have the range to step out to three, even though some people believed he may try to incorporate that into his game. Obviously, coming off a knee injury, he's lacking a little bit in athleticism and quickness that he showed early in his career. But I think that he could carve out a nice role as a backup center on an around 500 team, or even on the Sixer team, if he is able to slide into a 4 spot or play alongside Joel Embiid. I do think he would be able to do that a lot better than a guy like Jahlil Okafor, who just doesn't fit with Joel Embiid at all. I don't think that he really fits with the Sixers team at all at this point. But I think that Okafor, and I think that I'm probably one of the few people who might believe this, but I think that Okafor could have a role on a 500 team like Noel in a different capacity, just as a guy who's basically able to get buckets off the bench, really kind of buoy second offensive units just as a post-up brute. Dump the ball into him. You know what you're getting on the defensive end and the rebounding end, which is not a lot, but maybe he could score enough to be able to warrant keeping him on that team and feeding him enough in the post, kind of liken him to like an Al Jefferson type of guy where you can run an offense through him on second units, slow the game down, and again, just run post-ups through him, because he showed last year, averaging, 20 points a game, that he can score in the NBA. He can be an effective offensive player. He just hasn't really figured it out at all on defense. Is an absolutely inept rebounder, despite his size, despite his big hands, despite his good footwork. We just haven't really seen it translate so far, but I do think that those two bigs are useful pieces. I think that one of them should probably be dealt this season, just as far as what their trade value may or may not be. And then I think the guards as well. I think McConnell could be a solid backup point guard, kind of like a Matthew Dellavedova type guy, just as a really solid backup point guard. You know what you're going to get out of him. He's not going to turn the ball over a lot, not going to get you a lot of points, but he is going to be able to control an offense. He can distribute the ball, and he'll be successful that way.
Needs to learn how to shoot.
Yeah, he definitely needs to learn how to shoot, just as far as being able to space the floor and being effective that way. But I think that those three guys might be guys that I would throw on my list. How about you?
It's difficult for me because we talked about this a bit earlier when we actually went to that Cavs-Sixers game, but you look at a guy like Dario Saric, and this is obviously his first year, but he's really slow, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a starter on a decent team. He might be another bench piece. Then that's what happens to me when I start looking down this roster, right? You have Embiid, clear starter, possible, you know, top 20 player in this league. And then who else on this team is actually a starting caliber piece? You talked about Robert Covington. Could he be a starter? Maybe. There are guys who are probably worse than him who do start in this league, but that's like, you know, Luke Richard, Mbamute. He starts for a really good team because he's really good at one thing. Robert Covington, kind of good at defense, kind of good at shooting. I know he was injured in the offseason, so that actually may start regressing towards the mean in terms of how he shoots, but is he a starter? I don't know. Do you want to start Nerlens Noel alongside Joel Embiid? Probably not, right? I mean, Joel Embiid does most of his work in the post. Granted, he has shown that he can step out. Do we want him to step out as much? Probably not. He's so dominant down on the block, you'd rather have him there. Nerlens Noel, good bench center, like you said, but is that what you want on this Sixers team? Maybe. He's athletic. I don't think you want Jahlil Okafor. I'd like to trade him. Who are you going to trade him to when he's playing, you know, 5 minutes a night? He's only played 3 of the last 8 games. McConnell, no way he's ever a starter. Ideally, Ben Simmons is your starting point guard, basically, right? You slot Ben Simmons in a point guard. He probably guards wings. You need a guy like a Gerald Henderson. It's probably not Gerald Henderson himself, but I like the idea of a guy like Gerald Henderson as the two. He can guard ones and twos. He's quick, athletic. You're going to need a guy. It's kind of like the situation that you have in Milwaukee where you have Giannis. He's playing the one for you, but he's not guarding ones. So you have a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, Delly, who can slot in, guard the ones. And then when you look up and down the roster, you would hope that Sarge would develop. Stauskas, probably a backup, might be a useful piece, but you're in a place where I personally think, and I said this on Twitter yesterday, and some people disagreed with me, but I personally think that if not for Joel Embiid, the Sixers really wouldn't be in a very good place. I know Ben Simmons is likely a, you know, very, very good player, but we don't have any data points for him in the NBA, so I can't be positive about that. And essentially, Joel Embiid has changed the fate of this franchise single-handedly, which is impressive, but also something to think about.
Yeah, I absolutely agree as well that really, if Joel Embiid didn't pan out, and whether you want to say that it was either the right or wrong decision by Hinkie to draft him, if he didn't pan out, the Sixers would be absolutely atrocious at this point. I mean, just imagine this particular Sixers roster with the Jahlil Okafor injury that they had earlier this year, with the Nerlens Noel injury that they had earlier this year. Like, what do you even do at that point? Like, you're starting, like, maybe D-League caliber players on your team. What, is Rashawn Holmes going to start for your team like 25
games? He's in
the D-League
right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that he's a guy who he's shown flashes like one out of every 15 games that he plays in, but the Sixers would be absolutely terrible. And what Joel Embiid has been able to do for this team and for this city and really kind of basically flip it on its head what it's been the past 3 seasons, it's nothing short of amazing. And I think that this kind of brings us to another point that you've brought up recently and another thing that some Sixers people are kind of discussing and thinking about. And Joel Embiid has mentioned in the past couple post-game interviews that he's thinking about the playoffs. But should the Sixers be going for probably not the playoffs. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I love you, Joel, but slow down there, big fella. Is it something that they want to think about that they're projected right now to have the 3rd worst record in the NBA? They're currently at the 6th worst record in the NBA. But with this team's need going forward, with them needing obviously a starting one and or starting two guard on that team, and with this loaded draft coming up and the guard talent on that front end, whether it's Markelle Fultz out of Washington, Lonzo Ball out of UCLA, or Dennis Smith out of North Carolina State, one of those three guys, basically, and from everything that we've seen, those are probably going to be the top 3 picks, if not the 3 of the first 4 or 5 picks. And so the Sixers probably want to be in a spot where they can win a couple games this year. Obviously, they've won 3 more games this year than they did all of last year. So they are starting to get a taste of what winning's like. Obviously, Embiid's finally getting his feet wet, literally. Ben Simmons will be playing very soon. And so they'll have that experience together. But I think that it is really important for them with this being basically the penultimate year of the process, that if they can win right now and still secure a top five pick, and maybe even two top five picks with them getting that Lakers pick, with it being top three protected, they could potentially have two top five picks, two top six picks, and maybe really hit on another star in this draft in one of those three guards, and possibly another top-end talent as well.
I think you make an excellent point there. I really think that this is something that needs to be considered, whether or not the Sixers are thinking about it now. I'm not entirely sure, but one guy who I think has helped them this year and could possibly be a guy that you shut down at some point is Ersan Ilyasova. When we went to that game, he's really a consummate pro for them. He's a guy that's a stabilizing force. He's a guy, back spasms, knee soreness, something like that, who you may consider shutting down the stretch if things are looking dicey. But this is a really interesting thought experiment, right? You need a guy. You've been committed to the process, as we say. I personally am a huge fan of what Sam Hinkie did. I think that's been well documented, and I think it was the right move. When you look at a regulated industry, essentially, in the NBA, how do you get ahead? You don't stay in the middle. You go to the top or you go to the bottom. So he goes to the bottom. He takes chances. He gets a star in Joel Embiid. He may have gotten them another star in Ben Simmons. And now, this isn't the right year because Ben Simmons has been hurt, because this is Embiid's first year. It makes a lot of sense to continue to be in that top three, get one of these guards. I'm not a draft expert. I don't really watch college basketball, but everything I've heard is that these three guys can all be game-changing forces in the NBA level in terms of their ability to play the point guard spot. Obviously a position of need for this Sixers team. So who knows? You know, they might not stay this hot. They can always regress, but it's really interesting because you look at a team like Miami. I would say that they have every incentive to tank. They have their pick this year. They don't next year. They don't really have a lot of good players. Goran Dragic, who knows if they move on from him. I would think that Miami is going to be down there. Brooklyn's going to be down there. As much as they're trying to win, they don't have any incentive to tank, but they're just not a good team. They're not able to put together lots of wins. I mean, they're getting blown off the court lots of times. Jeremy Lin's missed a bunch of times. So those are two teams that you can probably expect to be down there. And whether or not you want to compete with them at the bottom or you want to put winning in your culture, essentially, because this city and this team hasn't seen winning for so long, I don't know. It's a tough decision. I know where I stand, but I'm an independent bystander. I don't go to work every day for the Sixers.
Yeah, and I feel the same way, and I think the Lakers are kind of in that same boat as the Nets, just as far as they're trying to win. Coach Luke is trying to bring back that winning culture in LA, but it's just not really there at this point for them. Obviously, they keep their pick if it's within the top three. If it falls outside the top three, it goes to Philly. I mean, imagine a Sixers draft where if they could get a top three pick and they can get the Lakers pick if it's, say, five or six. Imagine a team if they could draft, say, Dennis Smith and then maybe a guy like Malik Monk. That's that fills your one and two spot for the next 4 or 5 years, and those guys, as far as all accounts are concerned, those are two incredibly talented guys. And again, fills two huge needs for you in a loaded draft.
I think you're right, because when you think about this, the point of the process, in theory, is getting as many bites at the apple as you possibly can, right? So they've had X bites at the apple, and it gives them the chance to fail. It gives them the chance to pick a Jahlil Okafor, maybe not the right pick, maybe not the right draft. But when you accumulate assets, one of them hits, two of them hits, all of a sudden you have Embiid, you maybe have Simmons, and why not get more bites at the apple?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the Sixers are in a good spot right now, truthfully. They're in a spot where they've kind of been in this process the past couple of years. They're starting to win some more games. The fans are starting to get excited. I mean, who would have thought that last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that we'd be talking about the Sixers right now as an exciting team with an exciting future and something to look forward to? I mean, Joel Embiid appears to be a bona fide star. They have those pieces coming together. Simmons is going to be coming back. And then they have another great opportunity this year to really build on the process that Sam Hinkie started. And I think that Sixers fans, whether they liked it or disliked it at the time, you can't help but thank Sam Hinkie at this point and really praise the process that he set in place for this Sixers team and really put them in a great position where 5 years ago when we started this process, you had no idea where it was going to go. Last year, still had no idea where it was going to go, looked really dire. Then Embiid, as you mentioned, turns this whole thing around, and now they have an opportunity to be a playoff team next year, I think, at this point, with if they can pick up another piece or two in the draft.
Yeah, and I think the point that you made earlier is a cogent one as well, and that's just, you can tell how much this means to this city, these fans. We obviously live here, we're not fans of the team, so we're fairly independent at that, and there are more people talking about the Sixers this year than last year, tenfold at least. I mean, it's a totally different vibe when you talk about the Sixers, and it's because of this guy, Joel Embiid, and he is such a amazing personality in terms of just how he's galvanized these people. He obviously loves the game of basketball. He wants to win, and he's one of the most exciting rookies that we've had, and it's great that he's something that's essentially born of this process and has embraced the process himself, because he's a special player and he's a special person, it seems. And whether it's the way he's used social media or just in general how he's made an impact on the court, I think it's really important for him to, you know, continue to build on this, and this Sixers team to continue to build on the success and the building blocks that they've put in place, because this guy can be special. And if we see anything out of Ben Simmons like people are expecting, then as you said, this is a team that could potentially make noise and make noise a lot sooner than we thought.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that may not be able to be overstated, and it is kind of a joke at some point with Embiid and with his sense of humor, but he's really made this team, he's really made the game of basketball for this group of guys, really the game of basketball for this entire city. He's made it fun again. He's made it enjoyable. It's been a long couple of years. People in Philadelphia have trusted the process. A lot of people have stopped trusting the process. But really, one guy who never stopped trusting the process, the guy who essentially became the process, was Joel Embiid. As you mentioned, he embodies what that process is all about. He's certainly thankful to Sam Hinkie. I think the city of Philadelphia, again, should be thankful to Sam Hinkie. But really, they should be extremely proud. Yeah, they really should be extremely proud and extremely thankful that they have a guy like Joel Embiid. A guy who probably 29 other teams in the association would love to have at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. I think that the city can be happy with the path that they're on and where they stand right now, looking at their potential future. And I think that this has been a good chance for us to kind of discuss exactly where they stand and in the midst of their best 8-game stretch in 4 years, basically. So it's been exciting to watch. We're going to continue watching just as we do almost every night. We're going to actually come back to you. Like I teased before, I have Nick Scarria coming on. That's going to be on Friday. We're really going to talk more about how we've changed our perspectives as we've watched the game more and gotten into numbers more. So I'm pretty excited for that. And then next week, as we said before, Mike Podolsky going to come back on. We're going to do our mid-season awards. Excited about that. It's crazy that we're already halfway through this season. It's the middle of January. Feels like we just started this a couple weeks ago, honestly. But this is now our 12th episode. So really excited about all of that. And just happy about where we are as a podcast and continuing to watch the rest of this year.